All right, well, why don't we go ahead and get started? Thank you all for joining us this evening. I appreciate taking the time to come on the call tonight. We've got a number of things to kind of go over this evening. The first thing I just wanted to mention is, we really value and appreciate everything that the wound education team does. They put in a lot of hours, they put in a lot of effort to do the weekly audits. They're constantly traveling to help with new folks that have joined the practice. But I think one thing that sometimes we oftentimes forget is, they do have their time off. And recently there have been some phone calls and things like that off hours. And I just really want to make sure that everybody respects everybody's time off. I know Melissa and her team do a great job of trying to make themselves available, and they really do go out of their way to, accommodate some of us, whether that's, on the weekends, in the evening hours and things like that. But that doesn't mean that, whenever there's an issue, we can just call them at any hour. So, please really just do make sure that you, keep in mind their personal hours and their personal time. We try not to bother everybody else, evenings and weekends and those types of things. And we ask that you respect their time as well. So we've got a couple of other things to kind of mention tonight. They're going to kind of tie into what Milt has to say. So Milt, I'll turn it over to you, and I'll just kind of interject as we go along.
Okay, thank you. So hello everyone. First, just a little bit of an announcement of sorts. We've been looking at and will be entering into a few more markets. The latest greatest, if you will, that we expect to be starting. And I don't have an exact date yet because we're recruiting, and that will be state of Florida, where apparently we'll be adding over some period of time about 56 facilities. So more to come on that. If you see postings for the state, that's what that's about. So we're recruiting for providers. And we're recruiting for a regional manager. So just a little paid political announcement or news update. What I really want to talk about, and I've brought up before, and will until hopefully we get, the kind of progress that we need, is I'm going to talk a little bit about biologics and there are some expectations and some progress, hopefully, but also some opportunities for us to do better. As I've mentioned before, we have various nursing home operators and nursing home DONs, et cetera, who have an expectation that we will, in fact, be utilizing biologics because it's been found in the literature that there have been significant healing improvements based on their use in certain types of cases. And so it's become a standard and now an expectation by a lot of our clients and others who, when they interview us, including the folks for the Florida, who insist, that you're going to use biologics if we're going to sign with you, right? And so the answer is, of course. But with that said, our use of biologics is compared to our competitors way, way below average. Whereas we're struggling to get to like a 1% usage. Our competitors are averaging between 10 and 15%. Some are even much further than that, but I'm giving you a general average. So we've got a ways to go. And so Number one, I'm encouraging us to try to make use of biologics when appropriate. But there are a few things that I want to bring up about that. Number one, we use them in certain states for Medicare and Medicaid, and some states only for Medicare. For instance, if you're in New York State, New York State Medicaid will not cover them. So we are not ordering them in the state like New York. In other states, we are. State like Ohio, the use for Medicaid basically is just as good as it is for Medicare. In other states, it's far lower, but there is a slight margin, or slight to a nice margin, but nowhere near what it is at Medicare. And so we have the opportunity, to make use of that in certain states. We've hired Haley Sedavy to be our biologics coordinator, and she's doing a very fine job acclimating to that and following and monitoring the process. And she's working with the various biologics companies that we have contracted with to make use of that. And so we have, as I indicated by that, like less than 1% ways to go on that. And I'm just going to mention, like in the month of April, there was a grand total of 119 biologics ordered across the entire AmeriWound. Less than 25% of our providers are ordering. One provider did 64 of the 119 by themselves. And just to put a perspective on that, on what that is, and that's in a state where the biologics reimbursement is okay, is good for Medicaid, even better, obviously, for Medicare as it is in all states, because that's federal, and there's a single amount for reimbursement by centimeter. That provider, just on a Medicaid, if all 64 were Medicaid, I'm not saying they all were, but what we reimburse for it, that provider realized for that 1 month, $6,400. Okay, that's in addition to what they get for visits. The fact that it also adds the complexity of visits, but even setting that aside, if you do the math on that, that's about a little over $76,000, in a year if you annualize that. That's the potential there if it was all Medicaid. Now, if it was all Medicare, be double that. So the opportunity for every provider to increase their own reimbursement, as well as for the company, in addition to what it does in helping the patient, it's like win-win-win all over the place. So providers not making use of that, you're leaving potential revenue for yourselves and for us on the table. And in a sense, not satisfying the needs of some of the facilities that are looking out for that. So I bring that to your attention. We really need to up the usage of it. We need everyone to pay attention to that. But that said, every submission is not going to be approved. There's a very high denial rate because the reimbursements for these are so high, and the criteria that are required to be met have to be met. There is an IVR process getting an approval, and it has to be submitted for each and every application. So even if you think you're going to do 10 applications, you may not get there because the status of the patient may change. And if you continue to apply something once that has changed to where there's a denial, we would eat a lot of cost. We've had that happened twice. And the cost to us was about 40 grand each. So we don't want to incur that. Dr. Karamati can tell you that he checks to make sure before he applies the biologics. Once you peel off and open that up, there's no going back. And so if it's denied, then we're eating it. But we're pretty good at monitoring that, and we just need everyone to try and understand, even if it gets denied 10 times, that when you submit, all it takes is that 11th to 12th, there'll be a percentage that will get approved. But that won't happen if you're not looking for the opportunity when appropriate. Not suggesting every situation works for this. It does not. But if you have a stalled wound or a non-healing wound or a wound that's not healing the way it was supposed to heal, they could very well be eligible for the use of biologics. And it has to be a 30-day period. And this is where there's some mistaken understanding. Some providers feel that the 30-day start from the day they begin seeing that patient with that wound, that's not correct. If that patient already had that wound before the provider saw them, let's say they've had the wound for 20 days, you just started seeing them, you've only got 10 days to go before you'll be eligible to apply biologics. So you're not waiting the full 30 days. In other cases, you will, because it'll be a new patient and they're just, contracting the wound now. But don't make the assumption automatically. We need to just verify that, because there are opportunities to apply those when appropriate, again, medically appropriate, when from the time that wound is first documented. Not necessarily when you, the provider, are documenting it. If the facility's already done that. Yes, Dr. Weissenfluh.
Hi, good evening. I thoroughly agree. I just attended just a couple of days ago the Amnio Biologics presentation, and it's fantastic. And I'm very much looking forward to looking for opportunities to use it. When I was in the U.S. military at the Air Force, so obviously that's a federal agency level. We received permission to use, and I do not know the company. I forget, and I will do some research into it. But there was a biologic powder. It might be a different company that we're not associated with, but it was literally a powder that you put on the wound dry and then sealed it, and then, took it off 3 days later and reapplied it. And I mean, if the Air Force approves it, it means the federal government approves it, so it should be universally accepted.
Yeah, I couldn't speak to that. This is amniotic tissue that we're talking about, because there are different types of biologics.
Sure.
They're synthetic, and they're Dr. Karamati can speak more to that than I can.
Sure, no, absolutely. I appreciate your comments, Dr. Weissenfluh. We looked at a number of different types of products. You are correct. There are different formats and different versions of it out there. We've reviewed kind of gel versions of it as well. Those can be kind of more helpful with cavitary type lesions.
Yeah,
But
because I'm a former surgeon, I was usually like trying to heal midline incisions of post-surgical wounds.
sure, no, absolutely. We've looked at it. We've just kind of felt that this might be both in terms of sending out the products to each of us as well as application, that this was kind of perhaps the most convenient. I do want to kind of echo Milt's comments. I apologize, for being repetitive, but we have to kind of go over this information each month because we seem to receive a lot of these questions regarding things that we've kind of discussed before. So, clearly our discussions aren't reaching everybody. And, as I sent out in the email a few weeks back, this really has to have or has to include a clinical decision-making process that's up to each and every one of you. This is, as we've said before, this is not a cookie cutter treatment. This is not, an automatic thing where you just kind of place the order to be a continuing order. This involves some clinical decision-making. There has to be an evaluation. As Milt mentioned, I don't even touch the package until I've gone into the patient's room. I've taken off their dressing. I've looked at it, making sure that there's, no contraindications to use. Because unfortunately, once you open that package, you've bought it. And we all know there are, things are not perfect week after week. There are things that will come up. Sometimes an infection develops. Sometimes you have a decline in the wound. Sometimes, there are other factors that need to be addressed and assessed before making that determination. And, these are expensive treatments and that could be a costly mistake. But, this is one of those things where, you have to see what's in the best interest of the patient. If this is, if they've really struggled to heal, then this is a great option. Just kind of as a personal anecdote, a few months back, I had an administrator of all people who really has no clinical experience, come and ask me about a particular patient that, has struggled to make improvements. She's an older woman with, bilateral stasis ulcers. And she's had these for years and she came up to me and she asked me, "Do you do skin grafts?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And then as she started to kind of go and talk about it, I realized what she was actually referring to was these grafts, because these are actually becoming, I guess, more common to everybody. It's kind of infiltrating into kind of lay people conversation. And so, non-scientific, non-clinical people are starting to get to know about these. So it is something that is going to become more commonplace. Again, you have to find the right patient population. I think overall in the patients that I've used it, I've seen pretty good outcomes. Not everybody has healed. Not everybody has had, an improvement, but I think, it meets the quoted percentages of healing and improvement that is kind of described in the literature. So again, I encourage you to, really look at your patient population and see who can really benefit from these. Haley is a good resource. She's a good person. Understand that she does not decide whether or not the patient is accepted or not. That has to go through the company's insurance verification process. She submits the information. She's still getting on board. So, but I think, as Milt said, she's doing a great job, and she's going to be certainly there for a resource if you have questions. I am also more than happy to discuss any patients that you feel may, if you have any clinical questions about, appropriateness or anything like that. I am most, happy to, always discuss it in this forum. But if you want to reach out to me personally, text, email, call, I'm more than happy to go over that with you as well.
Well, thank you, Dr. Karamati. I think, from a corporate standpoint and an overall patient care standpoint, and everybody here, my name is Gary Weisenflew. I'm very new to the corporation. So, hi, my name is Gary. But I'm still learning. And so I would ask any of you, based upon Milt, I'm not sure I'm going to call you Milt because that's everybody else has called you so far. What's the best way to find the initial wound date? Because that is obviously different than the date that I would first see them.
Sure. So
your
date of onset is, you know, if it's in-house acquired, that's usually pretty simple. You know, the nursing staff will be able to tell you, you know, these wounds that are coming prior to admission, more often than not is going to require some chart diving. And, you know, getting access to the records of the prior institution that they came from, looking to see what the date of onset is, looking to see what failed treatments were used, because that's also important to document. And that's part of the template that we've, you know, created and distributed, is to include those failed treatments. You know, that's all important to document. And, you know, as we've kind of discussed before, even though we try to keep our documentation consistent with the facility's documentation, and for that purposes, we will state that our date of onset in that box, we will decide on, you know, whatever the facility decides on to stay consistent from that standpoint. You can, however, make a side note or a comment down below that, you know, that the true date of onset predates what I've, you know, what you've indicated at the top of the assessment form, you know, so that you can kind of justify where the 30-day period actually began.
Yeah, I really think that's going to be the way that we're going to up our usage rate of biologics, because, you know, I've been here only for less than a month, and I think I've had one wound that I documented consider use of biologics going forward. It continues to heal. It might be better going forward with the biologic, but, you know, it was a shoulder surgery incision that opened back up. But, you know, who knows how long he stayed in the hospital before, from the date of surgery. So I need to figure out how to get to that in an efficient manner.
Okay. Any other questions?
I think you don't really need to think too much about it, honestly. I think you just think anyone who hasn't improved 50% in the last month and just go for it.
Oh, I mean, sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's all you got to really get in. So your IVR, like, no, they haven't improved at 50% in 1 month. And I think that's the lead keying, at least from what Melissa and everyone else has taught me and from my experience.
So I will say that is certainly a big part of it. I mean, the other big part to be cognizant of is that you have to have proof of evidence that you've optimized medical management. And I think that's the other key for some of these things. You know, somebody who has not had their peripheral vascular disease addressed and treated shouldn't be getting these, you know, until you've documented that you have an appropriate ABI. Obviously, patients that are at, you know, end of life hospice, they're not going to qualify. You know, so you do have to kind of rule these factors and these conditions out. You know, Milt mentioned the skilled status. You know, these things need to be kind of crossed off the list. You know, you've got a diabetic with an A1C of 10 or 12 or, you know, something like that. Probably not the best idea, because, you know, if it does come back in an audit, and, you know, CMS then asks, well, you know, we see here that this patient has a history of peripheral vascular disease, you know, was this assessed and checked prior to the application? They're going to want to have that information. So you do have to make sure that those medical comorbidities have been optimized. But yes, I mean, you know, if you have somebody 4 weeks, hasn't really gotten much better, not at least 50% improvement in, you know, wound size, significant declines over the last couple of weeks, you know, those are certainly all acceptable candidates for use.
Yeah. And Dr. Adib, by the way, you know, congratulations. You've been one that's been on the rise on that. You did 19 in that month, which was the third highest in the company. So, you know, keep it up.
Thanks.
Good job, Dr. Deeb.
Any other questions or comments about the biologics we can go over?
And we are using different companies, and Haley will make sure that you're directed in the right direction. And each of these companies are willing to educate any of the providers on the products and using all that. That's it for me.
All right. Thank you, Milt. Again, if anybody does have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. Melissa, I know you have a few things on your agenda list as well, so I will turn the floor over to you.
Quickly, Dr. Who wanted to know if there was a cheat sheet. So I'm going to resend your checklist, Dr. Caramani, to all of the providers.
Thank you. And as I mentioned there, I have also distributed a template for both pre-application and application. Just a reminder, there are areas that do need to be revised. You will need to kind of put patient-specific information in those areas. So please do not just copy and paste it without actually filling in those areas. Otherwise, you will get a notice from Tisch that you're perhaps lacking information. Again, these are all guides. It is not, it's not the Holy Grail. You do tailor it to meet the needs of that particular patient.
Correct. So what I'll do is there are a lot of newer providers on this call. So I'll make sure I send out all of the biologic information that Dr. Caramani composed, which is the template and kind of the checklist. I'll make sure everyone gets it again. My information for the call, two things. I have reinstituted the yearly education for providers. So if you have not recently been onboarded, you will receive an email from me to schedule time for the yearly education if you've not already completed it. So just be aware and look out for an email. Dr. Cardan, we have to reschedule since I took my a quick trip that was unexpected. Everybody else, thank you for continuing to participate in MIPS. I do have to say shout out to Dr. Adib. He has pretty much knocked off every medication that we've requested on his list. So I do have to say I appreciate how hard he has worked to provide almost 100% of the information we've requested from him. All of the new providers on the call will be reaching out to schedule some time with you to make sure that you do fully understand what MIPS compliance is and what we need from you. Because that is, there are little nuances and it takes a little bit of time to kind of understand and get that information put into the system. So if you get stuff with your audit, don't be alarmed. We'll reach out to you and make sure that you fully understand what we need from you as far as MIPS compliance. Because if we don't do well as a company, we can get penalized up to 10%. If we do well as a company, that translates into better reimbursement for all of the providers. That's all I have.
To add to that, a few years back, we scored really well, and our physician fee scales were lower than they are today, and we were able to raise them as a result of our MIPS performance. This past year, when we were hoping to do the same, that didn't happen. We basically broke even, which is not what we were hoping for. And it only takes a few providers to not be compliant to mess that up for everybody. And especially if they're high performing in terms of number of patients. So the more that you can cooperate, the more likely we're going to be able to, in the coming year, up the fee schedules for providers. But that's really dependent on cooperation from virtually all the providers within the Maryland.
One more quick thing. I know Dr. Karamati did was asking everybody to be respectful of my time as well as the other clinical team members. Everybody that's based in the West Coast, I am available. Please don't hesitate to call after 5 p.m. My time, because I'm based on East Coast. What he means about be respectful of our time is the 10, 11 o'clock calls that I've received or text, and the reaching out on the weekends when it's not scheduled time. I'm more than happy to work with people as long as it's scheduled time. But yeah, sometimes I've gotten, you know, calls at 10, 11 o'clock, 11:30. Some of my counterparts have also. So just be respectful that, you know, we are on East Coast, but I'm happy to schedule time with anybody on the West Coast. And I'm more than happy to take calls at a reasonable time East Coast, because you guys do need support, you know, after 5 p.m.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa. So again, I'll just kind of briefly ask if anybody has any questions or comments out there. If not,
any issues that people want to address? We asked this on the last call because some of you have raised certain concerns. We ran through some issues recently on the Prima, and they're being addressed as we speak, but Samson's on the call. He can try to answer, but I mean, it's still a work in process. It's not totally resolved. It's improving, but we're not there yet.
I was going to say something about a Prima. I dream about a Prima. And, the only thing I was going to say is that the search mechanism is now markedly improved. Good. So that we can count, we can take one nightmare away. And then the other thing that I thought that's really improved is that there's alphabetization. Things are now alphabetized. The patients are now alphabetized. And that's pretty cool. So then the question maybe to Melissa is, is this kind of mean that we don't have to pull through the patients the night before? Because I found that when a Prima wouldn't allow me to pull them through when during this upgrade, I was able to just go pretty seamlessly the day of. And so the question is, should we be pulling through or not?
Dr. Cardian, I really think that that's a provider preference. I know Dr. Karamati prefers not to pull forward his notes, while other doctors prefer to. I think pulling them forward for you is working out. It's working out better when you don't pull them through now on this newest version.
Right.
I think we're having less problems for you not pulling them through the night before.
Okay, great.
So for you, I think it's working out better that we don't pull them through the night before. I know other providers that works for them when they do pull them forward the night before. So I think it's really a provider preference. So I don't want to make a general blanket statement. I think it really depends on each provider and what works for them and what works for their schedule.
Whatever will make your process more efficient and smoother is whatever, you know, is what everybody should be doing.
Correct.
Just like while we're on the Prima, does anybody else have an issue when you're trying to open a note from the schedule that it takes another like 20, maybe 20 seconds or so, or 30 seconds for the patient chart to load? Like it's just sitting in a circle for a long time rather than just instantly popping up within the first 5 seconds or so?
It takes like 45 seconds for me.
I will get that, and on occasion, I will get kind of that error box where it says ignore, retry, cancel, and sometimes the note will close for me altogether, and I'll have to reopen it. So, unfortunately, that appears to be a common issue.
now you guys have mentioned my dream, which is that I try to open the note and all I see is a circle and I wake up screaming. But
this is Dr. Lin. I've frequently encountered that.
So the lag time is a known lag issue time. That Samson is aware of, and that we did bring that to Aprima. Samson, do you want to chime in on that known error?
Yeah, so it's they're a little baffled as to why this is happening. Apparently, if you use the online on cloud service, it's significantly faster. Count your lucky stars. There have been a couple of providers that I'm not exaggerating when I say it's taken 2 to 3 minutes plus to open up a note. Those we have been addressed immediately and has been rectified. So as we get further down the line with different providers, if you are continuing to have lag times above 20 to 30 seconds, reach out to Dina and we can set up a time for Aprima to actually log into your system and see exactly what's going on. Depending on what they're able to identify within your system itself, there's likely a chance that they can increase the performance. But across the board for all providers, they are working on improving and increasing the performance time in general. But again, I'm talking about those that have extended performance issues at the moment.
Dr. Carden?
Yes.
My name is Gary. I would love to maybe reach out and speak to you because I'm going to throw myself under the boat. Melissa has spent multiple hours over the past 3-4 weeks getting my notes up to snuff. And I can't prove it, but I feel like many of the errors I have made have been by bringing forward notes from the night before, and I'm not doing that anymore. Not doing it. And so I would just like to know your experience and how you do it and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so I used to bring through my notes, and now I'm not. What with this recent upgrade, it's working better. And if there's anything that you're finding, you can call me anytime and we can try to go over it. I won't be as good as Melissa, but if it's something about a note, for instance, that I've written on one of the patients that you're seeing with my name on it, anything like that, please don't be afraid to call me or question.
No, I'm just looking for generalities. I'm just looking for general rules of engagement.
Yeah, I'm happy to get together with you on that. No problem.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments, anything else anybody would like to bring up and discuss? Right. Well, I thank everybody again for joining us this evening. I apologize we did go over a little bit on time, but hopefully this was helpful for everybody. And, you know, as I've mentioned before, if anything does come up that you'd like to speak to me personally about, please do not hesitate to get in touch with me. Thank you, everybody, and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.